Conference and Film Festival. Of course, we're not there right now. We're down at stairs at the Flamingo in Laughlin, where it's being held at the Alta Villa. And we have Dana
Tebow.
And Dana Tebow is an interesting fellow in that you've actually been busy for the first couple of days. You were on a panel, and then Sunday night you had an incredible thing we'll get into in a minute, in which I guess it happened very close to where you live there in Lakewood, Colorado, one of the sightings.
So it's just been a really mind-blowing, phenomenally historic series of sightings and a contact experience and some transmitted messages that are mathematical and astronomical in nature that are being recognized by everyone that's involved with it as potentially the most important event in history.
Now, we have something, you had a mathematical formula came out of this and a date here in December. We'll talk about it in a moment. But first of all, let's bring our listeners up to date about what we're actually talking about. And we ought to talk about your organization there, iFire.
Yeah, iFire is a nonprofit that has just begun, and we're just getting it off the ground, and hope to have a website up soon. That stems from a contact experience group that that I organized years ago that now is grown into a research effort for UFO phenomenon and related new understandings of the universe.
Well, we can talk about some of these contact experiences over the years in a moment, but you're in the midst of one now, investigating and researching that's just phenomenal. It's fairly recent, correct?
Yeah, actually, it's been ongoing for about 2 years. You know, Stan Romanek is the contactee or abductee, depending on what term you choose to use. And his first sighting, which was witnessed by many people, happened in Green Mountain, a suburb of Denver, Lakewood area, 2 years ago. And there was a series of sightings subsequent to that. And Stan's experiences are still ongoing. He doesn't live in the area anymore. He moved to Nebraska, and the phenomenon has followed him.
Yeah, we might get into that in a little bit, because this seems to be, I guess he actually left Colorado to get away from it.
He met a woman that he married who lived in Nebraska, and he was glad to leave, even though he loved the area and all of his friends were there, because he thought he could, maybe that all of his craziness would stop. Stan is you know, is amazingly ordinary and skeptical, was at least, of all of this. In fact, he ridiculed the whole thing, you know, in no uncertain terms, and now has been plunged into, you know, the ultimate kind of reversal of mindset.
Yeah, I guess he actually, you were talking about he loving Colorado, he was actually shooting some video to get his girlfriend to move to Colorado when this first happened, correct?
Right. Yeah, he just went out to kind of show her some of the scenery, and what he wound up shooting was quite the farthest thing from his expectations.
And this was a round saucer-type craft?
No, this was a very unusual and unique kind of a craft. It was a metallic, more or less egg-shaped, flattened sphere, sort of, that appeared to be somewhat segmented, as if it had three or four facets around it. And then underneath it were six smaller spheres in a ring that were rotating. And then in the center of that rotating ring was a blackness that really had a powerful impact on Stan, because he was able to look up into it, because it was kind of tilted. You know, it was up above some power lines, and it was tilted at an angle. And when he looked up into the bottom of this ship, it was like looking into infinity. You know, to hear Stan struggle with trying to describe what that looked like and the effect that it had on him is in itself, you know, convincing that he experienced something that was way outside of any normal experience.
When you say looked into infinity, was it like looking into a black hole or what?
He's used that word too, of like looking into a black hole. And that had an effect on him. It triggered the beginning of a series of phenomena, electromagnetic phenomena, where he was affecting lights, cars turning on and off, blowing out his computer, light bulbs and so on, and birds, began to mysteriously fly towards him. You know, he's killed maybe 50 birds, and he, you know, it bothers him to no end because he's
probably like me, an animal rightist.
Yeah, right. You know, he loves animals, but birds just unexpectedly will just veer towards him when he's in his car or in his house and crash into a window.
Have you got any explanation, or does he or anybody else, about why this phenomenon happens?
Well, you know, in general, it's quite common for people that have had contact experience to exhibit unusual electromagnetic effects. It's clear that there is some relationship between electromagnetic energy and something else. You know, I believe from the research that I've done that it's not electromagnetic energy per se that is the cause of, or the source of, so many of these unusual effects. If it was, science would have been able to identify it already. But the electromagnetic effects are kind of a secondary result of something more subtle that is as yet invisible or undetectable to science, you know, another realm of reality.
And talking about the realms of reality, he actually had some of these visitors come to his door, is that right, or something like that?
Yeah, after he had several of these sightings, he had a disturbing night in which he had a bad dream, and it bothered him upon waking. Strangely, he remembers his sister being in the dream, and his sister had a similar dream, and she remembers him being in the dream, you know, and that is a clear...
How far apart were they at the time?
Well, they were living together. He was living with his sister at the time.
So they were in different bedrooms having the same dream.
Right, exactly. And the dream involved someone coming to the door in the middle of the night. There was a knock on the door. The door opened, and I'll just tell you now what came out under regression, okay, which was a more clear and detailed version of what he dreamed. There was a knock on the door. His sister opened the door in kind of a somnambulant state, you know, and then just stood by the door kind of like a zombie, as if she was switched off, which is actually common in cases where there are other people around when someone is visited. And he saw these three beings that he described as freaks in Halloween costumes. That was his first take, because they had these large heads that seemed to be too big to even be held up on their thin necks. Large eyes that were not black like the typical gray, but had large blue irises. And they had straggly, thin, just sparse hair, he described as cancer patient hair, and they were about chin high to him. You know, that is a classic description of what we call hybrids. You know, there does seem to be an endeavor amongst these extraterrestrials to crossbreed themselves with us, and these beings seem to be some of those hybrids.
So these were probably hybrids. At least that's what you believe,
right,
at this time.
Right.
Now, what happened?
These beings.
In regression, this turned out not to be a dream, I take it, but
right.
Real.
Well, I should have mentioned, you know, upon waking up from the dream, the immediate recognition and concern was that he had marks on his wrists, lesions that didn't hurt but looked rather ugly, and he had scars on his back from tissue that had been removed, which was already healing in and actually filled in quite rapidly within a few days, along with the onset of these electromagnetic effects.
Now this is this particular part is fairly typical of a lot of abductions.
Absolutely. I mean, those are the classic signs, you know, that someone has been visited. What makes this case unusual is that there was is that far more seems to have occurred than the ordinary medical examination kind of scenario. He was subjected to what I think David Jacobs calls the deep stare, where the leader of these three beings, which was a female, entered his mind and proceeded to implant him with intense visions and kind of gestalt information, which left him feeling utterly dwarfed and overwhelmed and like a dumb animal in his words, in comparison to the mentality that he was experiencing, and his mind was just thinking the most basic kinds of things. My God, what is this? Who are you? What is that? Where are you from? What are you doing? And as these thoughts would arise, they would be answered in the form of symbolic and mathematical expressions that were imprinted into his mind. He didn't have a memory of any of this when he woke up, but this all came out in regression. And once it was recovered in regression, then he had it clearly in his mind, and it so intensely, he says, I'll never be able to forget it. It's like burned into my memory.
Now, we've had David Jacobs on our show many times, and David is, he feels that these experiences are not necessarily good. How about you? What I'm trying to get at, Dana, is was this a threatening experience, or, you come out with a warning here, which we'll get into in a minute, so... Maybe it wasn't all good, maybe it wasn't all bad, maybe it was a mixture, I don't know.
It was a terrifying experience for Stan, and as it is for most people. The truth behind this phenomenon, which is burgeoning to such an extent that it's reaching the point where it can no longer be denied or ignored, and I expect that this event is going to go a long way towards bringing this whole phenomenon much more into the open of ordinary consciousness. That the important thing is that there are many, many dimensions to this experience, and the terror that people experience when subjected to this shocking and completely alien, so to speak, experience stems in a large part from simply the strangeness of it and the complete disassociation and disconnection from ordinary reality that is a shock to people in the first place. There was also terrifying because of the
you got lesions on your back and your arms.
Right, and it seems like it not a very nice thing to go through, and Stan will be the first to say it's not. You don't really want to do it. It's no fun, but there is a much broader reality interfacing with the human race here that goes beyond simply whether it was a good or a bad experience. When you get into it, you realize that there is there are endeavors and agendas happening that are of an enormous scale quite beyond our attempts to fully understand it.
Well, now I got to get into this mathematical equation that you got involved in, because when did he suddenly kind of realize that he wasn't a mathematical genius? That he was just a regular guy, right?
Right. In fact, he has dyslexia, and he's terrible with math. I remember, for example, he refers to pi, because that appeared in his equations at one point. He said, that little hat thingy.
Yeah.
So his knowledge of mathematics is extremely limited. And I've come to know Stan fairly well, and I've spent time with him and his family, and. There's no pretense there. There's no way you know, and other mathematicians and physicists have come to know Stan, and we all agree it's just not possible. In fact, it's almost as if Stan may have been chosen for this because he's simply unimpeachably unable to have done this.
This is one of the riddles that maybe you, since you've been investigating this for a while and doing research on it, that bothers me, and maybe you can help me with this, is why did they pick certain people? I mean, there were a lot of people that saw this thing that day, weren't there?
Well, it's a huge mystery, truly, and it's one of the first things we want to know. It's one of the first things he wanted to know as he began to realize what was happening is why me? And he says, I'm nobody special. But as you begin to look into it, you find out that there's a history in Stan's family, just as there is in everyone that has these experiences. It does definitely run in families. His father was stationed at a military base in North Dakota back in the 60s during this infamous UFO flap in which ICBMs were supposedly, allegedly, shut down. His dad was there, and Stan remembers being, you know, hearing about some of that from his dad. And he's had he has memories of seven. Okay, there's a new card game happening now. This doesn't come up on that. Okay, he has memories of some strange encounters with an unusual woman, strikingly beautiful, but with overly large, elongated, oriental blue eyes, who was very, and this woman was very thin, almost emaciated, who approached him when he was a child, in several stages of his childhood, and would say cryptic things to him. And some of this happened in presence of his family, like in a parking lot, you know, of a store. She would just walk up and start talking to Stan, say, hi, how are you, and compliment his mother. Oh, You have such a beautiful boy. If you don't want him, I'll take him. And saying things to him like, everything is going along just fine.
Do you think this is the same woman years later that came to the door?
No, because the woman, the female figure that came to the door was you know, unmistakably, bizarrely, and obviously, you know, not human. This woman had some of those characteristics of a hybrid, but not so pronounced as to attract attention in public, you know, at least not at a distance. But close up, there was something clearly unusual about her.
How do you get to the map? How did this equation come about, and how did you get to the warning?
Well, the equations came out during regression that was done by Deborah Lindemann.
Uh-huh. She's from Colorado too, right?
She lives north of Denver, I think in the Fort Collins area. And she's a wonderful hypnotherapist, and she's worked with abductees extensively over the years.
Yeah, in fact, here at the conference they have a session every night with abductees, correct?
Hosted by Deborah. You know, it's kind of an open mic thing because, you know, what we all know that have been involved in this for any time at all is that these people that have had experiences, you know, have feel genuinely, pardon the pun, alienated from the rest of society because they have these extraordinary, they're carrying these extraordinary experiences and doubts and fears with them that they don't have, you know, a venue to discuss normally. You know, that's changing, and it's now getting to the point where there are more forums for people to look for others who have had similar experiences where they can be discussed.
So Stan, when you got involved, had this mathematical information already come out, this formula, or did you reveal it, or what?
Well, you know, I was brought into it rather synchronistically, accidentally. As I said, I wasn't even aware this was going on at the I've been involved in crop circle research, and I don't keep my finger on the pulse of UFO news in general, just because there's too much information, and you know, I'm trying to go beyond the fact that that ships are being seen to you know, the deeper questions. But this had all been happening, you know, in areas where I had lived for over a year. I went to a meeting of a UFO group, you know, a special interest group, where Stan happened to be, you know, as a guest, and I heard him stand up and start telling this astounding story. When I met him, he had just been regressed, and he had just hit, and the mathematics and symbolic messages had just come out, and some people through MUFON were already looking at the mathematics, but no one had yet even examined this astronomical information. And he said, do you know someone that can figure this out? And I said, well, let me take a look at it. And it was like Alice, you know, Alice in Wonderland down the rabbit hole from then on.
And you know, we could spend hours talking about this, but to get to the chase, as they say, or cut to the chase, as they say in Colorado, there's a date and something's supposed to happen. Is that right?
Yeah, the disturbing part of his experience was a very powerful and dramatic vision of planetary destruction. I mean, he saw giant tsunamis sweeping in, inundating coastal cities. He saw enormous winds that were so powerful that the pavement was literally being scoured off of roadbeds. And his terrified mind, of course, wanted to know, oh my God, when is this going to happen? And the response was a configuration of dots and symbols that were numbered, which, as it turns out, corresponded to a key that was within the equations, a representation of the solar system that could be matched with this configuration, and it turns into a planetary alignment or configuration. And I proceeded to immediately visit my good friend Jack Steinhauser, who started the Sophia Institute, a group that he and I put together a few years ago to investigate paranormal phenomena. And we did some work on some astronomy software, and actually within an evening we were able to discover roughly when this date was, and it was quite amazing to see how exact the match was. And just to get to the point, the date is December 12th, 12/12 of this year.
Well, 12/03, and the planets will be in alignment, some of the planets will be?
Yeah, I mean, it's not an alignment in the sense that they're all in a line. It's a configuration. It's more of a question mark shape, and it's a daytime configuration of planets, you know, because the sun is in the sky. So it's not something that we'd be able to see with the naked eye, but of course, you know, astronomically, we can know where the planets are going to be, you know, at any time, day.
So they gave this warning. What are we supposed to be able to do about it?
Well, you know, that's the frustrating part. Is that they didn't offer anything specific except this amazing set of equations. The first one being element 115, which you may have heard from Bob Lazar's stories of. A purported propellant coming out of Area 51. There's some problems with Bob's story, and I think he had part of the truth and part of it not.
I think in a large part, a lot of the UFO researchers, people that we know about, they're not given the whole fact.
No, it's quite. I mean, you know, there seems to be this campaign of deliberate deception. You know, Jacques Vallée identifies that, you know, quite out. And you know, it's enough to make most people throw up their hands and think, you know, I just you know, we're being tricked, we're being misled. Something is up, and we're, you know, they're not being square with us. It's the whole constellation of related issues. You know, why don't they land on the White House lawn and say, "Take me to your leader," et cetera, et cetera. What's obvious is that for whatever reason, there's a very highly developed reality of visitation and contact that is intended to be kept elusive and deceptive, and for why we can get into that, but we won't have time in this interview. Okay,
I understand.
And we have the same dynamic here in that there's a frustrating incompleteness to the messages that Stan has gotten so far, but he's still getting them.
December 12th is going to come up quicker than we know.
Then there's not much time to.
Is this going to be a natural phenomenon or man-made, or do we have an idea?
Well, you know, Stan had a fascinating dream after his regression, and this is quite common that authentic recall and information bubbles to the surface of the consciousness through dreams, typically after the fact, once the initial recognition or remembrance begins to occur. In this dream, he's walking along outdoors, and he notices a flock of birds that takes up, you know, lifts up off the ground. But instead of entraining and flying away in a group as they usually do, they become confused, and they're running into each other and flying every which way. And then he notices that bees and other insects begin to just rise up off of the plants and flowers that they were on, and then the dust of the dirt that he's walking through begins to rise up a few inches off, and then he notices that he's like weightless, and his feet are just treading air for a moment, and then there's this tremendous boom and crack explosion in the atmosphere, and everything comes back down to earth hard, and then these unbelievable winds begin. There's a lot of clues there. I mean, first of all, birds navigate geomagnetically. So that indicates that there's a disruption of the magnetic field of the Earth, for one thing, and followed by a disruption of the gravitational field of the Earth, which is strikingly consistent, perhaps, with the result of an impact of a comet or an asteroid to the Earth. We haven't lived through these things in memory, and I know of
well, this sounds like a lot of the things that you on your panel yesterday about Planet X you might have discussed, but that's not supposed to happen this quick.
Well,
is it, or?
You know, there's a woman who supposedly channels information from Grays, who has been predicting for years that Planet X would return and there would be a pole shift causing a similar catastrophe in May 15th of this year. This has been going on since 1995. Nancy Leader, and the website is Zeta Talk. I have some issues with her information as well. And if there's any truth to this information, by the way, Planet X, or a tenth planet, also appears in Stan's planetary configuration. So these effects also geomagnetic and gravitational disturbance could also be caused by the hypothetical effects that a massive magnetic body might have making a passage through the solar system.
Well, Dana, we only have a couple of minutes left here on this interview. Time has gotten away from us. It's been very, very interesting.
Okay. I want to say one thing very quickly, because I don't want to leave people hanging here. Oh, my God, what are we supposed to do? Subsequent to that, there were additional mathematical messages that seemed to be pointing towards the very frontiers of physics and our knowledge of time and space. They're threatening to reveal how they travel through space without traveling through space by jumping from point to point through
kind of a time warp.
Right. Which still in itself doesn't give us any immediate hope of rescue. Even if they told us how to build a space jumping machine, we didn't even have time to build it. But something big is happening, and you know, Stan himself doubts whether this thing he saw was going to happen in December, even though that's what he was told, you know, but he is convinced that something very, very significant is going to happen.
Now, you're an expert on crop circles, too. You've investigated in a long time. Expert is maybe not the right word, but you're well acquainted with them.
Yes,
and
yeah.
You've studied them for a long time. Any connection with crop circles and this type of phenomenon that we've been talking about for the last 40 minutes or so?
Well, I became convinced back in 1996 that there was a new phase of crop circle design that involved fractals, you know, which is part of chaos theory, and there seemed to be a new level of kind of communication, because crop circles are phenomena that interact with our minds. I mean, there are countless cases of designs appearing that appeared to people mentally before they happened, for example, and there seems to have been an attempt to establish kind of a dialogue between. I got into analyzing these patterns extensively, and there's mathematical, geometric, fractal knowledge or understandings, it seems, that are encoded in these things. The crop circle scene has become very clouded as of late because of some very sophisticated efforts to duplicate crop circles, you know, by people, and I've kind of gotten away from that, and it almost seems like a channel that has been polluted or clouded to such an extent that another kind of an avenue needs to be found, and Stan seems to be almost a continuation and an enhancement, and certainly a much qualitatively magnitudes much more clear and specific kind of a mathematical communication.
Now, we're out of time here, Dana, but we have your email address posted here. But go ahead and give it, though, for people who don't want to look down at the bottom of the page.
Yeah, that's ifire, spelled I-F-I-R-E, at earthlink.net. I have a nonprofit foundation, ifire, spelled E-Y-E, instead of I, followed by fire, but that site isn't up yet. I hope to have that up soon.
Okay, and when you do, we'll put it up on our website under Friends of our Program. But it's ifire at earthlink.net. Okay, thanks very much, Dana.
Hey, thank you, Jerry.
And we'll be talking to you again soon.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Thank you very much.